Members, I'll call the Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform to order. And we don't have a quorum yet, so we're not going to do official business until we do. But as soon as we do, I'll let you all know. But in the meantime, we're going to have Representative Howard come forward. And Representative Howard, thank you for bringing us this bill. This is an important conversation and topic for this committee to go over. Unfortunately, members, this is going to be an informational hearing on House File 23-24 because the committee does not have possession of this bill. And my apologies to committee members. I assume that we did. That was our request. I just assumed we did. And it was sent to the Committee on Government Operations, which pending you know, our decisions here, it would have been my recommendation of where it goes. So it goes there first. And we're obviously up against committee deadline, and so I think it makes sense for that committee to act on it, and we will do our best to act on it before committee deadlines are through. But nonetheless, I think it's a good, important conversation for us to have. There are some testifiers that are teed up. And then, members, there was another bill that was originally on this agenda. That bill was withdrawn, quite frankly, after checking again with some stakeholders in law enforcement. There was a broad agreement that we weren't ready for prime time with that bill. So all that by way of saying, members, that it's going to be my goal to adjourn us early, and hopefully some of us can then do simple things like grab lunch. And I will be meeting afterwards with the Dems on the committee to go over the bills that we're going to discuss over the course of the next couple of days, and I would certainly encourage my GOP colleagues to do the same, or grab lunch, or do both. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a quick question, since we're only going to be hearing this as an informational hearing, I'm assuming that government operations will re-refer to us, and I'm assuming since we've had all the testimony, it will just take a quick motion in a gavel, and so we won't have to go through it a second time. Is that your intention?
Chair Dean, that's correct. We you know, frankly, given the time constraints, going through the same bill twice becomes even less good to do. So, but hopefully we can have a very good vetting here today, and barring any amendments when we come back with this bill, well, actually, I shouldn't put it that way. If there are amendments, when we come back with this bill, we will certainly thoroughly vet those amendments. So with that, Representative Howard, House File 2324.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do look forward to the conversation today about this bill. House File 2324 is a bill to create a Peace Officer Excellence Task Force. It would be charged to study the laws, rules, contracts, and policies that govern the employer-employee relationship between political subdivisions and peace officers. And the reason I believe that we need a task force like this is to bring stakeholders together and to work together to further improve the public trust with our law enforcement. The vast majority of peace officers serve our community well every day. But on the rare occasion when an officer breaks that public trust in a significant manner, there needs to be a clear system in place to hold those officers accountable. I believe our current system, and I mean that broadly about our system, allows some peace officers that seriously betray the public trust to avoid serious consequences. And I believe this is unfair to the vast majority of officers that serve our community valiantly every day. It'll make us stronger and safer if we work together to strengthen the already excellent profession of peace officers and make sure we have better, clear, transparent systems in place to hold officers accountable that do, on those rare occasions, break the public trust. And I wanted to mention that I really, although these incidents are sporadic, they can have a significant impact on our community, which I believe why this task force is so important. And specifically, I think, I believe a recent state Supreme Court case provides the opportunity and importance of creating this task force. And I'm speaking of the City of Richfield versus Law Enforcement Labor Services. The origin of this case comes from 2015, when a Richfield officer struck a Somali teenager in the head during a traffic stop, an incident that was caught on video, generating a lot of concern in our community and throughout the state, really. The officer failed to report this use of force violation, and this was something that wasn't an isolated incident for that officer. The city did terminate the officer. However, he was reinstated by an arbitrator with merely a 3-day suspension. The city challenged this ruling and won in the court appeals, but the state Supreme Court held that the ruling of the arbitrator must stand. And specifically in the ruling in the state Supreme Court, I want to call out the one quote, which is, quote, "no doubt many observers would find this officer's actions disturbing," unquote. Yet the second part of that statement is that the decision goes roughly that the state and our statute and our current policies provide no alternative or no remedy but to uphold the decision of the arbitrator. And members, I don't think it's particularly productive to just relitigate that the Supreme Court case, but to me, there's a problem statement in there that that we ought to really consider. That there's a problem when no doubt many observers would find an officer's actions disturbing, yet our system in place do not hold that officer accountable. And so I'm hoping that this task force can come together and take a look at the systems in place, policies and standards that help us continue to strengthen the relationship between the public and our excellent peace officers, which is a goal I know that we all share. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite my first testifiers up, Mary Lee Abrams and Chief Jay Henthorne.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Howard. Please come forward. Very well. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Public Safety Criminal Justice Reform Committee. The last time that I spoke before a legislative committee was about this time of year.
And I apologize for interrupting, but we need to have you state your name just because we're recording the proceedings.
Thank you. My name is Mary Lee Abrams. I'm an attorney with Abrams and Schmidt.
Welcome.
Thank you. The last time that I spoke before a legislative committee was about this time of year in 1989, and I spoke in favor of the Peace Officer Discipline Procedures Act. Today, I am speaking in favor of the creation of the Peace Officer Excellence Task Force. I've spent over 30 years as a labor attorney, 19 of those years representing law enforcement officers on behalf of the largest police union in the state of Minnesota, and for the last 10 years in private practice representing employers. Over my career, I have witnessed a broadening gap between the transparency and accountability that the public demands from law enforcement officers and the broken processes of licensing, hiring, training, and disciplining officers in our state. I want to acknowledge that the majority of peace officers working in our state do a great job. It's the other officers who make the news, and the departments are challenged on what to do with them. I represented the city in the Kinsey case before the Minnesota Supreme Court. It was a serious case of an officer who used force against a Somali youth. He threatened him, he struck him in the head, and then he failed to report his actions. That was not the first time that this officer engaged in use of force and failed to adequately report his actions. Richfield is not the only case. All you have to do is take a look at the media to see the other cases out there. Right now, St. Paul is struggling with what to do with Officer Palatowski, who was terminated for a use of force incident, and he was later reinstated by an arbitrator and instead issued a 30-day suspension. The officer has since been indicted by a federal grand jury for the same incident, for violating the civil rights of a citizen that he repeatedly kicked and seriously injured. St. Paul taxpayers have paid the $2 million settlement in that case, and the officer is now facing a 10-year prison term. He's currently on paid administrative leave pending his criminal case. In Duluth, there is a similar case where an officer dragged a drunken male over 100 feet by his handcuffs through the skyway, and then, when he passed through a door jam, hit his head as he was dragged by the officer. This was not the first incident of force for this officer. Duluth terminated him, and an arbitrator reinstated him to his position. Law enforcement is a unique field. It's unlike any other public service provided in our communities. They have the duty to protect and serve while also having the ability to take a life and liberty from our citizens. This is the time for stakeholders to review where we are on a very intentional basis and study new avenues to ensure that we do have excellence in law enforcement in our state. The citizens of our communities expect transparency and accountability from law enforcement officers. I would ask who better to advise the state legislature than a broad range of invested groups and individuals from the law enforcement community who will meet and discuss the issues of accountability and transparency and prepare recommendations for our legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Abrams. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Welcome. My name is Chief Jay Henthorn from the Richfield Police Department, representing the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. I was the chief of police at the time of the Nate Kinsey incident. As stated prior testimony, he had been counsel trained and disciplined and remedially trained for the past 4 years since 2011 on his use of force not being reported and improper use of his canine partner. He failed to report his incidents properly and or not at all. One thing we did as a police department, and we do with all our officers, we spent tens of thousands of dollars in training through his career to make sure that he adhered to the policies and procedures and to the public trust of our community in Richfield. When we started to have incidents with Officer Kinsey, we saw an opportunity to enhance his ability to be a police officer by putting him through intensive remedial training, not only in use of force, but other policies and procedures, but also with his canine partner. We wanted to make sure that he adhered to the policies and procedures of the department and to maintain the community's trust of our department that we continually work day in and day out to build with our community. This incident in 2015 struck the core of our police department and our community. As a chief of police, I am responsible, as other chiefs of police and sheriffs in the state of Minnesota, to conduct and perform the performance of our employees and the police and to police our communities. We also have to answer to elected officials and to the public of the communities we serve in being transparent and open with our communities. As I like to say, the buck usually stops at the chief or sheriff at that level, and we are held accountable for the mistakes our employees make. While the support for the decision I, the past city manager and the city council, made has been extremely supported and applauded by the community to the highest court in the land, being the state Supreme Court. While we lost trust of our community with the job that our police department was doing, we were applauded by the situation of appealing the case to the civil court in Hennepin County, then to the appellate court, which we won, and to eventually to the Supreme Court. This has instilled some of the trust back. However, I do not have answers to the community members who have called, emailed, and spoke to me in public. Please, Chief, we do not want this officer to come back. You have to do something. While I am left with an empty feeling in my stomach, knowing I have done everything I can do as a chief law enforcement officer of the city of Richfield, I respond, while the officer will be back in our ranks, I will make sure that he is ready to serve the community and gain the public trust and police the Richfield way. I feel that as law enforcement has progressed, the arbitration process has not. From my job experience and arbitrations and dating back 20 years of my 30-year career, I feel that there needs to be change. There needs to be balance in the process. The institutional knowledge of chiefs and sheriffs is crucial to their respective agencies. I believe there needs to be a better balance achieved between the employment rights of police officers, the need for the chief law enforcement officers and political subdivisions to maintain integrity and excellence of the peace officers we employ. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Representative Howard, typically I'll have all the witnesses testify, but I think in this instance it may be good just to keep the mayor, right? Your Mayor Abrams and the chief in front of us to entertain any questions, any clarifications from committee members. I do want to observe that that I heard a consistent theme and value with both of your testimonies, which has to do with the priority which you place on maintaining community trust. And I think implicit in that is a duty on both your parts to advance a high level of professionalism for all your staff as a key element of maintaining that community trust. And my hope, members, is that we can particularly use that as a centering place from which to have this conversation. I think, you know, it could be tempting to get into the particular issues of a particular case. I certainly would discourage us from doing that. It's not by the chair's intent to scrutinize the individual, you know, actions of one public servant as the focus of our conversation. I think it's instructive in terms of how that decision has evolved over time, and I think it's that the parameters around those decisions that I think begs Representative Howard's bill, and quite frankly, makes it incumbent on us as state lawmakers to ensure that we're developing the powerful policy parameters under which our local elected officials can carry out that work of maintaining and building community trust, and in this case, doing so while advancing public safety. So with that, we do have a few questions from committee members. Chairman Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and author, Chief Romero. One of the questions that I would have that maybe the task force, I want to know if you think this would be a priority for the task force to take up. I have worked with St. Paul's administration for years. One of the most glaring examples I can think of is when there was an officer who was on Facebook giving certain recommendations of how to run over protesters in the street and be able to get away with it. And there was an uproar, and the mayor was concerned that we were going to have a riot on our hands. But he was precluded from making any public statement regarding final action on the employment of that particular officer. The officer was probably going to be fired. The handwriting was on the wall, but the Data Practices Act prohibits the statement of any member of the city regarding the final disposition until they've had their due process hearings. That, to me, and I understand that public employees unions value the stay of those statements and the privacy of those statements, but it seems to me that when it comes to police officers, there's a substantial public safety interest in maybe, I don't know, modifying that rule. What would your stance be on that with respect to how the task force would take it up?
Chair Lesh, I'll comment generally that I think transparency is in how we're communicating when we have these instances happen with the public. That communication, I think, is very important. I might ask Mayor Abrams to comment more specifically about if you've seen this in other cases or
Mayor
more specific
Abrams.
Comments.
Thank you very much. Just so that it's clear, I'm really not here in my mayor role. I'm here in my day job.
I thought about that. You know, it's like, well, she didn't identify, but she is a mayor, and so out of respect, But certainly, for the record, we'll make sure that that's clear.
Thank you very much. I certainly don't mean to sit here and suggest the outcomes for the task force. I think that the list that Representative Howard has put forward is a very comprehensive list of incredibly experienced people in law enforcement. And from my perspective, what better group than to review what's happening with law enforcement than that task force? And that certainly reviewing data practices and how that fits in to this whole idea of transparency and accountability is something that could come possibly as a recommendation from the task force. It is something in practice that basically hamstrings departments and public entities. They are constrained by data practices, but that's, I think, really something for the task force to determine. Is that something that should be explored by the legislature from my perspective? This bill is not about any preconceived notions, but I think everything is on the table, and data practices might very well be one of those areas that can be explored further.
Well, thank you,
Chairman Lush.
Ms. Chair. I certainly hope so, because, you know, I'll tell you what, I represented 8 defendants who are the I-94 protesters back in 2016 or whatever the year that was. I can't remember what year it was. And I will tell you, one of the major reasons why there was so much public unrest that led to those protests was because people were not allowed to say what was going on. They weren't disclosing a tape. They weren't disclosing one thing. And I am a little bit ambivalent about that. But when it comes to final actions regarding a major faux pas committed by a city employee, I think the public could be kept much safer by disclosing some of that stuff. I would just add, Ms. Chair, that I really hope that whether it's this bill or another bill, we are given some opportunities to move past the constant criticism of police that we have right now. I'm one of those criticizers, absolutely. But I'm also looking forward to the day when we're not in the position of making those criticisms, because I think it's sooner or later it gets to be bad for the community and public safety overall. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairman Lush. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's an important discussion, and I think this framework is a good one to try to help bring a lot of parties to the table to air out these issues. My questions are for the Chief. You talked about the public trust concern with having officers on the force who are engaging in incidents that the public views is problematic. Have you seen lack of public trust with some or more of your officers lead to an effect on public safety with, for example, people not being willing to come forward to report or other things along those lines?
Initially, we did have those issues. So what we did is we created more of a community-oriented policing policy, where each one of our officers, after this incident, I instituted the policy, has to do 24 hours of community-oriented policing above and beyond what they're expected to do out on the street. And we started to build that trust back up with the community. We also hold a lot of coffee with the cops, so we really sort of expedited what we're doing out in the community in order to build that public trust back up, because we took a pretty big hit in the community with this incident.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm also curious about what the impact has been on your police department. I would imagine that the vast majority of your officers would find this type of action to be reprehensible, and not being able to institute any discipline. Has that had an impact on morale for your officers and on the leadership for their ability to try to send a signal for the direction they'd like the department to go?
Chief Hathorne.
That is correct. When I became chief 5 years ago, I changed the culture of the police department to what it used to be and focused it more based upon community-oriented policing. When this incident happened in 2015, we had some of those things occur. We, again, went out in the community and did what we needed to do to enhance the public trust. But one of the things that happened, which was very unique, is that when this occurred, we were you know, a paradigm shift, not only from the culture of the department, but from our employee base. And while Officer Kinsey was out, while the city was appealing this, we turned over almost half our department, which I think made a big difference in the roles of the police officers, the roles of the administration, and how those officers that were there when this occurred had since left and were not an influence on the younger generation of officers that we brought in. So I think that made a big difference in the public trust. I think it made a big difference in the police department and also in the city administration.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Howard, you need to understand why this bill was brought forward. In the law enforcement community, we strive to be our best. And unfortunately, we have a few that give us a black eye. It's not very many, a very small percentage. But unfortunately, that one bad apple, even though it doesn't make the rest of them bad, everybody thinks it is. Just like the Michael Jackson song from years ago, One Bad Apple. I know I've been in the situations where we've had the bad apple. We have done everything we can to terminate that bad apple. But one of the problems that administrators have to deal with is the arbitrators. Arbitrators are only picked if they show a habit of being 50-50. Instead of looking at the facts and making the decision on that particular case, they try to be close to half of them on this side and half of them on this side, where if they can find any excuse to keep that 50-50. We need to do something to change that aspect of it. So even though he's a bad apple, he doesn't get his job back because that arbitrator wants to stay 50-50. How do we do that? I don't know if this doesn't address that issue. That's a big issue. I've seen it in my department where we had a officer given his job back not once, but twice. And that makes it very difficult. And we're, as Representative Lesh stated, we're guilty, all of us are guilty of it, of lumping all the officers together. Mainstream media is real good at that, and they pick up on that, and they exploit that. We need to do a better job ourselves down here at the legislature, not characterizing everyone as the same. In the law enforcement field, we are in dire need of officers. We don't want to lower the standards. We have some of the highest standards in the country, to the point where we have states and cities from all over the country coming to Minnesota to hire our people that are in our colleges and our technical colleges and our schools to recruit our candidates out of the state of Minnesota. Yeah, it's true, we have a lot. We have enough to fill the vacancies we have that are license eligible, but the vast majority cannot pass the background check. So our numbers are very dwindled and very low. I'm more than happy to help find a way to deal with that issue. I do have some suggestions on your bill. The first one would be on line 2.1, to make it more diverse. Instead of just everybody being out of the metro where a lot of the problems unfortunately exist, you have both metro and greater Minnesota. Same thing with the appointment by the governor, both metro area and greater Minnesota, because the issues are different, a lot different between the two. And also on line 12, or 2.4, number 12, I would suggest that it would be law enforcement only union type or labor organizations, because they are the ones that really understand the issue. you get an organization that doesn't really understand the law enforcement issues and the special circumstances that they have to go through, I don't think you'll get the proper information. Thank you.
Mr. Thank Chair.
You. Thank you, Representative Johnson. I do want to reiterate, as I explained at the beginning of the hearing, some of the members came in a little bit afterwards. This is an informational hearing because we technically do not have possession of the bill right now. My expectation was that we would have. That was our request, and something kind of got crossed. And so the bill is headed or sitting at government ops, which is where we would have sent it, assuming the committee wanted to keep it moving. But all that, about to your point, sir, is that it is the chair's intent that the bill move its way back our way. There will be money in this bill, and so that's going to fit within the deadlines for us as we move forward with our omnibus bill. At that point, I think would offer Representative Johnson good opportunities to take up some good advice here. But Representative Howard.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson, or Representative Johnson, I agree with, I think, everything that you said, and I really appreciate the recommendations, and look forward to working with you to incorporate some of them. In particular, I really do view this as a way to strengthen the, because of the isolated incidents and how easily it sort of turned the public on itself on the issue of the law enforcement community. I saw that happen in our community over this incident, and it was a real window into me in terms of how we can build up some of that trust. I saw a lot of folks come together around our community in support of our law enforcement community as a result of bringing this forward, and result of our community saying, this is what we hold to be true about our law enforcement officers in our community. And so that's kind of the intent of this bill, and would really look forward to working with you on it.
Is there a point of clarification?
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Howard, I want to thank you, because I want to make sure we have the best option we have. But I also noticed that Nate Grove is here from Post Board. Maybe he wants to explain a little bit the disciplinary procedures that law enforcement do have right now.
Certainly happens to go come forward on that. In the meantime, I think on this point or the previous point.
I just want a point of clarification, Ms. Chair. One Bad Apple was not a Michael Jackson song. It was the Osmonds. They released it in 1970.
Going back too many years.
They released it in 1970. It didn't chart on the Billboard Hot 100 until January 1971. But it was written by George Jackson for the Jackson 5. So that might have been the, where your confusion came. It sounded like a Jackson 5 kind of thing. Okay, I just wanted to point that out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I learned something here. And by the way, Chairman Lesh, yesterday I think you referred to yourself as a flower child, and Chairman Liebling, who was sitting next to me, leaned over and he said, he's too young to have been a flower child.
Summer of love, baby.
I think Representative Johnson wanted to have a question of the Post Board.
Mr. Chair, I just wonder if they could explain the current disciplinary procedure.
Very well. And my understanding, members, is Post Board is neutral on this bill itself, and so I think it's really the question has more to do with just the technical question around procedures. And we still have questions from Representative Dean, Christensen, Edelson, as well. Good afternoon, Director Gove.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Nate Gove, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. In general, the board deals with officer disciplinary action based on the license, status of the license. And so, if a complaint is filed with the board, a written complaint upon which we would act upon, it would really involve allegations of violations of our rules, could be mandated training requirements. Most of those fall however, on the chief law enforcement officer. But concerning an individual officer, it'd be an allegation that they violated our standards of conduct, which are a number of areas, but primarily if we're talking about criminal violations, all gross misdemeanor convictions come before the board. A felony conviction is an automatic revocation, and we currently have 11 selected misdemeanors that come before the board. Now, there are other areas for officers who, before they become licensed, that the board would deal with. I would say primarily our discipline centers around convictions of when it comes to licensed officers, and I would say not very many. If we deal with around 20 to 30 cases per year, per fiscal year, of 12,000 licensed officers. And the vast majority of those are not meeting legislative mandates concerning training. But we do have a number of cases due to criminal convictions that the board deals with. The board impanels a three-member subcommittee. By statute, two members of that complaint investigation committee have to be licensed peace officers. We are represented, our board, by an assistant attorney general. The notice is given to the licensee and the complainant if they wish to appear on a matter that falls within our jurisdiction. And I might add, the vast majority of the complaints that are sent to us are service-related that don't fall in our jurisdiction. They have to do how a search warrant was conducted, how a search was conducted, information given on a traffic stop, wide variety, or other adjudicated cases that we receive complaints on. But if it is in our jurisdiction, we hold a hearing at the post board and receive information from the affected parties. They can be represented by counsel to the extent that it's proven that there's a violation of our rules. The committee has a number of options available to it, one being to dismiss the case, another to seek a corrective action plan, which in many instances, that's exactly what they do, an agreement between the licensee and the board for corrective action, which can result in some license suspension that is stayed if conditions are not met, essentially probation from the board. The board can issue a written reprimand or censure the licensee, can suspend the license, and in egregious cases, can revoke the license. If the licensee decides they don't want to accept the board's offer, should it be a corrective action plan, or the board moves immediately to what's called a contested hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings for discipline, for findings of fact and recommendations to the board. The board does not have to follow the administrative law judge's recommendations, but must take those into account to make a final board order on that. So it's a system under data practice that ongoing investigations are confidential. Once there's a decision, when the board order becomes final, it's public. In most cases, a hearing before an administrative judge and a contested hearing would be public. So, if a matter is dismissed, it becomes private licensing data under licensing agency subdivision of data practices. I know it's I don't mean to ramble, but it's a very complicated system that doesn't have a one size fits all, but I would say that the board and its subcommittee looks at protecting the profession, holding officers to appropriate standards, ensuring that due process is received by those involved, and certainly it aims to prevent future licensees from violating board rules.
Director Gold, I'm just curious, would it be unreasonable? So it's 20 to 30 cases a year, mostly around violations of training, expectations of few, with convictions. It, given the purpose of this, I really like the, I think you said protecting the profession. I really like that, that term, if that's what you said. But because I think there's a strong interest here across both sides of the aisle for doing whatever we can to consistently lift up the ability of police officers to be supported, and then also for our peace officers to consistently display high qualities of professionalism. So this is a bit of an open-ended question, but I'm just curious, given the 20 to 30, is it unreasonable for the public, of which we give voice to here, to consider whether or not your review might be too narrow, that perhaps if our goal is, in fact, to objectively raise that level of accountability and quality standards, that perhaps the board that it would be reasonable to expect the board to look at more than 20 or 30 instances of, let me say, opportunities to enhance outcomes with peace officers across the state.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, that I've heard that criticism. And I've said the board operates the way it was set up, quite frankly, with the resources and the staffing. And while some may say it's too narrow, I think that's always an ongoing question. That's not to say, however, that, which I understand this discussion today is quite separate from what the board certainly gets involved in, is that it's not like officers are not being held accountable. It's just that we have the Pulse Board, since its inception, has been more of a front-end mechanism to ensure standards surrounding training and ongoing licensing and discipline, while a part of it was not the primary purpose of the Pulse Board being built and founded back in the late 70s and that whole changeover. But we do, you know, all gross misdemeanor convictions come before the board. You know, serious offenses. I've signed a number of revocations on serious offenses that have forever barred officers from practicing the law enforcement profession in Minnesota, and we enter them into the National Decertification Index, which is a nationwide database that agencies from other states check to look and see if people have been decertified or delicensed in other states.
Very well. Thank you, Director Gove. We do have questions from Chairman Dean and Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howard, I think this is a good start at beginning to look at some issues around police conduct. You know, the task force really is about starting that process of investigating what are the factors that should be considered and how we should look at them. And I believe it's a pretty diverse set of members who would give a wide perspective, and I believe that peace officers are well represented on this task force as well, and I think that's critical. I'd like to address some of our rhetoric, because I've heard us say several times that the majority of officers are good officers. I think the vast majority of officers are good officers, and it's really, really critical that, you know, although it was Donny Osmond that sang the song, it doesn't take a lot of bad apples to really sort of, you know, inhibit officers in communities working together to make their communities as safe as possible, not just for community members, but also for officers. I think it's a mutual goal, and I think we need to consider that moving forward. And, you know, just like when we talk about education, we don't want bad teachers teaching our kids, because our kids are important. we don't want bad officers out policing our communities, because that's important as well. Since you're up here, Mr. Gove, I have a question for you. So when a licensee is under investigation or under review, while they're in that process, or maybe even before that process starts, what happens to an officer who decides to resign from the force on which they're currently serving? Does it continue? Does it stop? How do we deal with those situations?
Director Gove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, if it's a violation that, let's just say a conviction of a criminal offense that comes within the board's jurisdiction, it wouldn't matter to the board if they had resigned or not, as long as they have a maintaining a license. Either, and if they resigned, their license would shift to inactive, or they would have no peace officer authority attached to that, but they would be maintaining a license.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director Gove. So in those situations, the finding of the board would still be reported to the larger agencies, so that individual couldn't, make their license active in another jurisdiction or another area like that.
Director Gold.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, depending on the final outcome of it, there would be a public document available for a background investigation by another agency. My experience on the types of incidents that you're referring to, the officer in many instances has been terminated by the agency, and we proceed with our disciplinary activity on that.
Very well. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has there been precedent? Have you looked into other states? Anyone in here, if you could answer the question. Have you found other states that have had similar programs that have been successful?
Representative Howard.
Chair Mariani, Representative Christensen, there is evidence that this is a national problem. The Washington Post did a pretty comprehensive analysis of 37 of the nation's largest police forces, and I'm forgetting the exact years for the study, but found over 500 officers that had been reinstated after pretty serious use of force violations. So I think in some ways this is an issue that communities are wrestling with across the country.
Mr. Chair, this goes back to accountability, transparency. I have a question about the officer that we talked about before, and I know we don't want to dwell on that one, but I just have a question about how that all went down. Is it true, or is this just cop show stuff, that officers usually have a partner with them? Am I correct in that?
Director Gove.
That's cop show stuff.
Okay.
The vast majority of officers in Minnesota work alone.
Okay. In a perfect world, then, maybe. Okay. Okay. So I wondered if there were mandatory reporting rules that especially if another police officer had witnessed something like this, would they have any mandatory reporting guidelines that they'd have to follow? That was my question there.
Senator Howard.
So I think Chief Henthorne might be best to answer this in terms of the policy of our department. Generally, as I recall the case, there were policies in place to report use of force, and this officer, not just in this instance, but in a repeated basis, did not follow that process.
Chief Henthorne.
Thank you. We do have policies in place, as do several departments. If there's another officer on scene and they witness something that is against policy, that they need to report to their supervisor. In this case, there was a second officer that showed up on scene, and neither one of them reported to their supervisor. That officer was disciplined as well, but decided to resign. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
We have another question for Representative Johnson, but in the meantime, we have Representative Howard, you have some testifiers as well. some other testifiers, and so I want to make sure that we get their testimony in. It sounds like we still have questions for the...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if the chief could stay up there.
Representative Dean. Representative Johnson, your question to these. So why don't we do that, and then we'll, after these two questions, yeah, we'll move to
just,
the
just
other.
Just to the chief. So,
well, well, hold on, hold on. So Representative Johnson and Representative Dean. What was that okay. saying? Representative Johnson.
Representative Chair Mariani, chief. I personally was in a situation where we were supposed to report. I was in a tough position. This is very tough reporting on your supervisor. How do you handle those situations? I had a sergeant that I ended up reporting him, but it was a tough decision to make, and it made it a little difficult to work for a while.
Chief Hathorne.
Well, that is not an easy situation by any means, and it is tough to report on a fellow officer. In this situation, our policy mandated that when something like this happened, they both should have reported it, or the other officers should have reported the conduct of the other officer, at least to their initial supervisor, and that wasn't done at all.
Sir Johnson, follow up.
Chair Mariani, chief. The supervisor I was supposed to report to was the one I had to report.
Chief Hathorne.
That's a difficult situation, believe me. That is not easy to do. And as we went through the process and through the arbitration, the officer did admit that he should have reported to a supervisor.
I would imagine that part of your question goes a little bit also to the issue of smaller police departments and jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, Chairman, that is correct, and it's a tough situation for the officers that have to report their supervisor, who actually can come down on them for other things and make their life miserable.
That's true.
Representing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the chief. So, in the case where the other officer resigned, was there any report of anything that then happened that would have brought it up to the level of the post board actually looking at this? I mean, that was sort of my question previously, is, you know, there are occasions where officers resign before the department actually brings forward actions. If you could speak to that, that would be great.
Chief Hathorne.
The officer in this situation, after discipline was imposed, decided to resign. So there are forms that we fill out, and I sign as the chief law enforcement officer, and we send them to the post board, and stating that the officer has resigned, and then that all that paperwork is then sent to the post board. In this situation, there was a criminal investigation involved, and there weren't charges for anything felony level. I did appoint a special prosecutor to look at any gross misdemeanor and misdemeanor charges, and there were no charges filed against that. But the second officer involved, just decided to resign and get out of law enforcement.
So in that case, there would have been no action for the post board because there were no charges or convictions for a misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or a felony in that case. Am I understanding that correctly?
Chief Hathorne.
That is correct.
Very well. We have Representative Howard, Janae Bates, Justin Terrell, and Leslie Redmond on the list of testifiers. If they're present, if they can come forward. Welcome to the committee. It's good to see you all again. Whoever wants to go first can go first, but begin by stating your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Minister Janae Bates, and I am here representing both Isaiah as well as Camphor Memorial United Methodist Church, where we are the only predominantly Black and historically Black United Methodist Church in the state of Minnesota, and very proudly celebrating 100 years of ministerial service. First, I want to thank you all for having me be able to testify on behalf of this bill. There are beatitudes in Scripture, in the book of Matthew, and many of them talk about things like what it means to be blessed and how you are blessed. And it talks about being meek and poor and mourning. But it also says, blessed are the peacemakers. And that's very important in this particular context because we are talking about peace officers and what it means to be a peace officer in community. And so we know that it's not always easy to be meek. It's not easy to be mourning, which also means it's not easy to be a peacemaker. It does require a level of honesty and vulnerability and integrity and also accountability and transparency. And we absolutely need that with our police force, with our law enforcement. And as long as they continue to engage in community, they should be accountable to community. And so I am completely for a task force that is allowing that to happen. I want to say that 4 years ago when I had my burning bush experience where it's when a minister realizes their call into ministry, mine was because my community had a profound distrust for law enforcement. We had experienced a major breach and a lot of harm. And so there is an opportunity to repair that breach, but it is going to take that work. And so this is a step towards making that work happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister Bates.
Chair Mariani, Representative Howard, Minister Bates, committee members, thank you for having me. My name is Justin Terrell. I'm the executive director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. And once again, I just want to commend this committee for not just the leadership on this bill, but also for the debate and the discussion. I highly advise you to get your Michael Jackson references correct next time. There's plenty of...
We'll work on that.
There's a great catalog to choose from. I'll keep my remarks brief. The council, you know, our mission is to make sure that the African Heritage community benefits from the process, the policies, the resources that are moved here in within this body. And so, you know, it's no secret that there is a long history of community distrust with the police, with law enforcement in the state of Minnesota. We have 150 years worth of evidence to review if you need an example. And, you know, I just want to come forward today to say that this bill, this task force, is a great step in the right direction. It is my opinion that collaboration and working together towards public safety is the only way forward. And we need officers and we need community members at the table talking about establishing standards of excellence. In this case, integrity is my favorite word in this debate. And I think that as long as we work towards public safety and integrity in the service of our communities, that we're headed in the right direction. So I'll just urge everyone to support this bill. And I want to thank Representative Howard, who is my representative, for bringing this forward in the aftermath of what we're dealing with in the neighborhood. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Terrell.
Thanks so much.
Ms. Redmond, welcome back to the committee.
Grace and peace, everyone. Again, my name is Leslie Redmond, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as the president for the Minneapolis NAACP, also known as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The last time I was here, I said Happy Black History Month, so it's only appropriate that now I wish you a Happy Women's History Month, because it is the month of March. And with that, I thought it would be appropriate to start off with a quote from our passport, the only woman who was quoted in the passport, Anna Julia Cooper. She said, "The cause of freedom is not the cause of a race or a set, a party or a class. It is the cause of mankind, the very birthright of humanity." I thought that was appropriate because police officers play a very critical role in the freedom of America and our citizens. We recognize the historical trauma, obviously, that certain communities have faced at the hands of police officers. And a lot of the time, we do have the conversation about the couple bad apples. And we know the bad apples can spoil the bunch. And that's extremely problematic because of all the good officers that we have that put their lives on the line every day. I have a number of members of my family, from uncles to aunts to cousins, who serve, and they put their lives on the line every day just for certain individuals to then put them in jeopardy. We have to recognize to whom much is given, much is required. And if we have an opportunity to do the right thing with this task force, I believe we should. We have to recognize that there are a lot of chiefs and mayors on the ground working to build relationships with community on a day-to-day basis. And that also is being put in jeopardy when we have arbitrators coming in who are not on the line building relationship with communities, making decisions that are pushing back the decisions of the chiefs and people who have been on the ground fighting with us. Since my time in Minnesota, I've been on the front lines after the impact of Justine DeMond, after the impacts of Philando Castile, after the impacts of Jamar Clark. And I see the faces of the parents, of the loved ones of these individuals. And a lot of the time, it was individuals who were acting outside of what they were supposed to do as officers. And I believe that puts us all in jeopardy. It puts the good officers in jeopardy. It puts our community in jeopardy. It actually jeopardizes all the trust and community relationships that have been built on a consistent basis. I believe that this task force is going to actually really help to build community relationships, to really hold officers accountable, and for us to really move forward as one Minnesota. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ms. Redmond. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House File 2324? Please, sir, come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Hawkins, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. And Mr. Chair, just as a reference, I have 37 years in law enforcement, and I spent my last 8.5 years at Burnsville as the police chief. And just kind of echoing some of the things that have been talked about, the vast majority of the time when there's issues with an officer, when they make a mistake, it's usually minor, and coaching and mentoring can take care of it. Sometimes maybe some training, but certainly there are the times when the issues are much more serious. Discipline comes into play to try to correct that behavior, and sometimes firing is one of the choices that's necessary as well. When you take a look at this bill, sorry, I got to put my cheaters on. Back in the day, that was not a part of the equipment you had to be worried about. But when you look at Subdivision 5, duties of the task force, it looks like two simple sentences, but when you take a look a little bit deeper, it becomes very complex. When you start talking about policy, officer contracts, internal investigations, progressive discipline, binding arbitration, the legal issues, and the public data, it becomes complex pretty quickly. And I think one of the things, and I think it's really addressed here, that one of the things that Representative Howard wants to do, you have to do a deep dive. You really have to do the research and the analysis, kind of what Representative Johnson was getting at, really what the core issues are here to correct that behavior. And the one thing that I would offer up, there's a resource that's available right here at the state through MMB, and that's Management Analysis and Development. They do research and analysis. And they go very deep and do a very thorough job, and they develop very, very good reports, which I believe would be very useful to the task force to help them really try to understand what they're trying to get after. As a police officer, and I'm currently still sworn, protect and serve, those are strong words. That's a privilege. It's a privilege to protect and serve. And the only way that you can do that is to have that trust and mutual respect of that community that you serve, and the vast, vast majority of us take that very, very seriously, and I certainly do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Good advice, Representative Howard, as well. So a few questions, and we'll move. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I did notice that Dennis Flaherty is here from MPPOA. I'm just wondering if he had any words on this bill. Thank you.
Very well. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers and the members for the discussion. I think it was a good discussion to help tee up really, you know, the broader community discussion about how we raise up the important relationship with our community and our peace officers. I have some homework to improve the bill, and I thank members and the public for helping with that, and look forward to moving forward this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. We've heard some good advice from a broad range of citizens here. Regular citizens were involved in our communities, from our assistant commissioner, from practicing attorney, as well as the police chief, and of course from your colleagues here on the committee. I look forward to continuing this conversation. We will look for this bill to come back or come to us from government ops soon, and we'll have that conversation when it does. So with that, there's no action taken since we don't have formal possession of the bill. And with that, members, we're going to adjourn early. I'm going to ask the DFL members to meet in the side room here for a quick conversation about the upcoming bills over the next couple of days. Certainly invite my GOP colleagues to do the same as a group. With that, members, this committee stands. Oh, no. This committee stands adjourned.